Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Episode number 4 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. And again, this is Tony Stensland. And again, I just real quick want to just get some information out there to everybody that the idea with this podcast and what we want to do is just kind of have a laid-back feel with the podcast and really focus in on Duluth and the Twin Ports and the running scene and what's going on both in race results and other running endeavors. We'll touch on some national things at times as well, but for the most part, we're going to focus really on Duluth and the Duluth running scene. Hopefully, everybody's enjoying it so far, and we're going to continue on having a good time. Today's episode is going to be a little bit more unique as well compared to some of our previous episodes. We're going to have some more interviews involved with some of the different races and things that have been happening, as well as one major local celebrity as well in the running scene.
We've been out in the field.
We've been out in the field, taking our professionalism up a notch, as it were.
Plus, we have two microphones today, so this is really, we're getting serious.
Yeah, seriously, that's pretty soon it'll be a YouTube channel. That would be the worst YouTube channel because we're literally in my kitchen right now.
Well, they tell us that we have faces for podcasts.
Faces for radio for podcasts, which is pretty accurate,
actually. We don't want to go too far with the YouTube.
So let's dive into episode number 4, and we'll get going. Talk about some of the race results. Mike, take it away.
Cool. Well, first result we have, we talked about this last episode. The race was actually going on during our last episode. This was the Firefighters 10 Miler up in Thunder Bay, Ontario. We got the local win with Scott Bailing, 51.01. That's a smoking fast pace, I think 5.07 per mile, somewhere in there. Trevor Zemack is a Thunder Bay resident, and he came in second place with a 51.31. And the other result, at least on the first page that I noticed, was Jara Wauman with a 104.31, 6.28 pace for 10 miles. That's not too bad, huh, Tony?
That's pretty solid. I know I can't do that for sure. Nice job, Jara.
Other results, the NMTC Spring Series wrapped up just a couple weeks ago, last week. Nick Nygaard, our previous interviewee, won the series. I know he won many of the races. I know that he didn't win the Chester one, but it was enough to take the series win. Yep. And Sarah Grenberg, another Duluth resident, I believe, took the ladies' side with the series. So they had their first pick of a sweet prize. I was way down the list, but I got a nice six-pack of Superior Hiking Trail pocket maps, so I was happy. And a sticker.
Those are actually really nice to have, yeah.
So, yeah, that was cool. Other quick race result that we have is Last Runner Standing. Last Runner Standing is a loop format race, 4.17 miles per loop, every hour on the hour, and pretty much it's a war of attrition until, obviously, because it's named The Last Runner Standing, until one person is still up there. So super unique format, really draws a lot of attention in kind of the ultra marathon trail, ultra world. A lot of the competitors have, finished some serious races, from Superior 100 mile to ITI.
200 mile races.
I mean, there was a pretty healthy crop of competitors. I think only 4 of them out of maybe over 100 starters made it past 100 miles. So that just is a testament to the course there. And the winner was Brandon Johnson. Brandon got second place last year with 90 some miles. This year he went 31 loops, 31 hours, no sleep, 129 miles, which is just crazy. And Brian Korgard got second place. So the only way that Brandon can go that far is that Brian was pushing him the whole way. And those two were duking it out for, I think, many laps at the end. last year's winner, Nicholas Whitbread, was in the mix too. So it was those three kind of duking it out for a while as well. And actually, we have some interviews from some of the competitors right after they finished up, and race director Andy Holock. So here we go with that. All right, we have Amy Broadmore here. She just finished loop 11 for 50 miles.
That was 12, wasn't
it? That was 12.
Or else I'm going to keep going.
That was loop 12.
Yeah.
Nice. How did it go out there?
It was really fun.
Nice. What was your favorite part?
I love this race because you get to run with people and talk with them the whole time. Got to run with my husband, Andrew. Got to run with a friend, Todd. Got to make a couple new friends.
So cool. That's really fun. What's your favorite part of this course?
Of this course, I like that it's so variable so that you're always, you know, you're doing one thing and then it changes. So I don't really have one favorite. I like the, it's hard to describe. I like the plunge at the end, and I like that.
You do. You might be the only one.
Yeah. Well, and then I like the severe hiking trail part.
Of course. Nice. Well, hey, thanks. Awesome job.
Yeah.
We'll see you out there.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
All right. We're here. It's 10:50 p.m. We're at Last Runner Standing. This is the Duluth Rundown podcast. I'm here with Jake Sari. Jake, you finished 50 miles today, 12 loops. How do you feel?
Feeling pretty tired. It was a pretty long day. It was super hot at first, so the sun kind of got to me. But overall, it was really fun.
Yeah, good. So you said that this was the longest you've ever run at one time. Is that correct?
Yep. Yep, the longest I did before was a 50K. And I've done like a marathon, but so this is the longest I've gone so far, so I'm pretty excited.
Nice. What was your expectation going into this race, and how do you feel coming out based on your goals and such?
Well, I would have liked to get 100K under my belt, but I'll have to wait for that one. But I'll take the 50 for now. And it's a nice course. It wasn't as challenging as I was expecting, actually. And it felt like I was going super slow at first, but you know, it's just harder and harder as you go on. So
did you have a strategy kind of going in, or what was your strategy?
I just kind of hung out in the back at first, and then kind of got to know the course, and then I got to, you know, you take like little marks on the trail, and then you just like check on your next lap and see how your time's looking, and then just kind of keep the same pace going. And I started going a little faster, and then I started slowing down.
yeah, cool. Did you have any kind of super low points, super high points, or?
Mostly high points. I felt really good for the most part, and last lap started to get to me a little bit, but it wasn't really that bad. It was fun.
Nice. So what's on next for you, on the docket next?
A couple weeks from now, I'm doing the Chester Park. It's a six-hour race. And so far, I don't have anything else planned, but just really looking forward to that one.
Nice. Well, great job today. Congratulations on your longest run ever. Did awesome. Yeah, cool.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. All right, so we are here at Spirit Mountain, Last Runner Standing. It is currently 11:46 a.m. on Sunday morning, so we're at 25 hours, 46 minutes, and we're here with race director Andy Holock. Andy, what do you see happening right now?
Well, I hope the rain holds off, because I see some clouds coming in right now. Yesterday was kind of hot, so a little bit of rain might not be so bad. It's kind of dusty out here too. I'm getting a lot of dust in my eyes, so I'd like that. A little rain might keep that dust from blowing around. Right now we've got three runners on the course, so last runner standing. We're going to keep going until there's only one runner left. They've gone 104 miles. They've gone 104 miles already. They're on the course right now. They should be in about probably the next 5 minutes. So in fact, I see somebody coming down the hill right now. I think it's might be Nick. No, I think it might be Brian and Brandon. They're looking great. We got three runners out there. We got Nick, Brian, and Brandon, and they're all looking super strong. So they're on their 26th race, or their 26th lap.
Yeah.
Going on 108 miles, and I see them continuing for a little while. I don't think anybody's gonna be timed out, or they're gonna quit on this race.
Before yesterday, did you did you think that you'd be here at noon on Sunday?
Well, I didn't really think about how long I'd be here, but I did think that somebody would get 26 hours this year. So I was thinking maybe between 26 and 30. So we're going to be at 26, and I think that all three runners are going to make it in at 20 to 20, you know, to this race at the 26th hour. So, yeah, I think we're going to be here. So I kind of thought we'd still be here, but I really didn't think about it in those terms. Like,
yeah,
I'm going to be up until noon after I, you know. So I've been up a lot.
Yeah.
And okay. I'm getting tired, but hey, the runners are a lot tired than me, so I've got to I got to gut it out.
One last question. What do you think it takes to be the last runner standing?
I don't know, that's a good question. I think it takes a lot of things. I think it takes, we all know about it. We're ultra runners, right?
Yeah.
You were here last year. You did awesome. And you would have been here this year if you went to had a time race up in Grand Marais. I know you would have been. You'd probably still be out there. But I think obviously perseverance. These guys, they got to have guts. They got to have heart. And they're digging deep right now.
Oh yeah.
You know, they're heading into the pain cave a little bit. But I think all these guys are smart runners. I mean, it takes experience. And you know, like Nick is a pretty experienced 200 mile runner, so he knows what it's like to go past 100 miles, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us haven't run past 100 miles. I haven't ever run past 100 miles. So so I think that's huge. I think that experience and knowing that his body can go that far,
mm-hmm.
that's a big deal. You know, like you said earlier, he's trying to do 200 miles in 48 hours, which is ridiculously fast.
Yeah.
As opposed to like a cutoff at Tahoe was, what, 70-something hours?
Yeah, 80 maybe. I don't know.
So experience helps, and I think all these runners are experienced. I think they've trained specifically for this race a little bit, and you know, a lot of people come and do last runner standing, and it's a great event for that. It's a great event for people that want to get a nice long training run in. Like, I want to do a 50 miler, I want to do 100K, I want to do a 50K. It's an awesome way to get a 50K training run in, or a 50 mile training run. So that's cool. But I think these guys, you know, if you want to do well on this, I think train specifically for the course, which means like work on that downhill, because we've got the plunge. If you're not familiar with the course, we end with what we call the plunge, and then right at the bottom we call it the quad buster. So every race, 4.17 mile race, you're going to be coming straight down Spirit Mountain about probably 600 feet, because we're not going quite to the top of the quad chair lift. Mm-hmm. So you're going to eventually, each race, you're going to get almost 700 feet of elevation gain, and then you're going to drop straight down probably 500 solid feet to the bottom, and that's tough on your legs. So mm-hmm. I know at least one runner has been training on this course, and he's still out there.
Yep.
So working on specifics is huge, but experience, specificity in training, and guts. I think those are the three keys.
Yeah.
And I think all these guys have it. So I might be here for a while.
Wow. Well, yeah.
I don't want to be here too much longer tonight, but I'm happy to spend the rest of the day here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I want to spend the night here. I might need some of your listeners to come and bail me out in the middle of the night, because I'll be falling asleep. So.
Oh, man. Well, I think our runners are probably coming in.
All right. Let's cheer them on.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Andy.
Let's go.
All right, let's get to some upcoming races that we have. We'll just kind of jump right in. Next Friday, June 21st, 6 p.m., Grandma's Weekend kicks off with the William A. Irvin 5K. So that's a pretty competitive race. You know, a big 5K here in Duluth, one of the biggest in Duluth. So check that out. Next day, of course, we have Grandma's Marathon and the Gary Bjorklund Half Marathon. That is June 22nd. You know, you have to be far, far away from Duluth to not be impacted by that race. So, and we'll get to that a little bit later. The next weekend, if you're looking to get more, a nice little shakeout from Grandma's, the Midnight Sun Midnight Run is a super fun event. That's Friday, June 28th. You know, I like to say 11:59 p.m. Yeah. It's essentially that Friday night.
It's a little 5K on the lake walk.
Yeah, kind of a speedy little 5K, and just a totally unique event, because you have to stay up till midnight to run it, you know, kind of weird. But that same day, Black Hills, 100 miler, and I think they have some other distances, 50K, 50 mile, I believe, too, even a shorter one. That's part of the Gnarly Bandit series, so I think there may be some local or statewide, you know, ultra people heading to that in South Dakota. And then finally in this next kind of 3 week series we have is the Chester Park Trail Race, which is a race that I put on, I guess, Chris and I, my business partner with Duluth Timing and Events. And so that is Sunday, June 30th. And I'm really excited about that because we've expanded the race from a 5K. The last 2 years we've had just a 5K option. Well, this year we're expanding. We have two loops of the 5K course for 10K. And a six-hour event, which is loops on the 5K course, as many as you can do within 6 hours, essentially. And I was really nervous. I didn't know if anyone would even sign up for that. And, you know, it's kind of an arduous race, you know, like just Chester over and over. But we've had a really great response.
Nice.
And
nice.
I think we have 15 signed up right now. And
oh, wow. So that's good.
There's going to be some healthy competition, I think. And like you heard, Jake Sari, who did 50 miles at Last Runner, he signed up. I think he might put up some good numbers if he can recover. And
nice.
A few other, Ann Farley, I know, is a stud skier. I think she is definitely in contention to take the win on the ladies' side. And I'll have to check the sign-up list. But that's going to be a fun race to watch, I think, and a fun race for the competitors, too.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to hear a comparison, too, from Last Runner Standing, especially from Jake and anybody else who will have done both races. That loop that I know that you have designed, Mike, is a really sweet loop. It sees a little bit of everything that Chester has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be really cool. In fact, just to do that loop more than one time is going to be a really fun day for sure.
Yeah, and I think so too. It's gonna be interesting, and we'll see if people like it.
Also, a super cool event to go spectate at, because then you could just like Last Runner Standing. It's fun to go and spectate at those things and watch everybody come down loop after loop, hanging out. So yeah, it's gonna be a fun day for sure. I'll be out there helping out and cheering people on, and really looking forward to that. That's gonna be cool.
And also just one last thing with Chester Park is that we're doing a volunteer trail work day. You know, obviously doing loop after loop in Chester, it has an impact on the natural surface trails. And so, you know, kind of decided to pitch in and try and fortify the trails a little bit before the race. And, you know, Dan Proctor manages a lot of the trails in Chester. Also, the Superior Hiking Trail Association has a piece of trail, COGS, the City of Duluth, and the Chester Bowl Improvement Club all kind of have a stake in the health of the trail. And so, you know, we want to do our part to make sure that, you know, we can at least mitigate some of the impact that we're, you know, obviously having on the trail. So that's on Sunday, June 23rd, 10 a.m. We're doing a course preview run, and then the volunteers, we'll get to work right after that.
So the day after the race, another quick little run just to kind of see what conditions the trails are in, and then some work to...
It's actually the week before.
It's week before. Gotcha.
Yep. So
June 23rd, you said. Yep.
June 23rd. Perfect. And then the Chester race is June 30th.
Gotcha.
So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Awesome. That is, yeah, that sounds like a really, really great idea.
Kind of in the same vein as, you know, trail running. Let's do a little trail report. All trails are open.
Yep. Basically, everything's open. I looked on the COGS website here, and the Pekegama trails over in Superior, I think, are maybe closed right now. Those are always pretty wet. But as far as I can tell, all Duluth trails, as we record today, all trails are open. So,
and a lot of the trails are in really good conditions. I mean, COGS trail, if you like a little bit more of a smoothed out, you know, wider running surface, or the Superior Hiking Trail through the city, I know it's just in really nice shape, and the greenery is starting to pop up, and a great time to be out on the trails right now.
And again, if you have any questions on trail conditions, go to COGS.com, COGGS.com, and in their trails section, that's pretty much where all the information will be, especially the trails. Their Twitter feed is really good.
Also, current conditions on the SHTA website, I think it's Superior Hiking, or I don't know the website, but
yeah, I think
Google
it used to be shta.org. I think is what it used to be.
And I know you can check the city trails on the city website too. So, I mean, there's a lot of options to check the trails, and I know we've talked about this in the past too. So,
looks like it's superiorhiking.org for the SHT. Yep.
So let's get into the what I'm into section. You know, Tony, we're both into Grandma's Marathon. I mean, this is the big show here in Duluth.
Yeah, Grandma's for sure. This is like the Super Bowl for us in the running world. As far as I'm concerned, this is like the Indy 500 weekend. This is the real deal. This is fun stuff here, I think. I just get so excited when people are coming into town. The expo is crowded and all that that you have to deal with. I actually like it. I think it's cool. I think it's a cool thing to have to go down and see. And yeah, okay, it's crowded and walking around's hard, but it's well worth it as far as I'm concerned to go down to the expo. I love it. I love race day morning when all the buses are driving by my house early in the morning. And it's just, you can just kind of feel the excitement and nervousness inside of all those buses. It's just, we just live right off of Snively and buses just zoom, zoom. And, you know, like every couple of minutes, another bus goes by. It's just really cool. And you wake up early and you're having your coffee and you're getting excited. I haven't participated in Grandma's for quite some time, so I get to spectate a lot, and it's just as much fun to spectate. And then when the race goes itself, I've got a lot of athletes that are doing both the half and the full. I'm just super excited. There's about 37 to 40 people that I'm training that are going to be doing these races. So I'm really looking forward to seeing them, you know, participate in the race. I'm kind of like this kind of nervous and proud parent as I wait for people to to come down the road and cheer them on, see how they're doing, read their faces, read their body languages. And hopefully they're all going to do really well. Hopefully we get good weather for Grandma's as well. It's just an exciting weekend. I just really love it. And then post race is a lot of fun too. So to me, it's just the best. As a runner, it's just the best weekend here in Duluth.
So Tony, where are you going to be on race morning?
Race morning, I'm going to be all over. I'll probably, you know, my wife's doing the full, so I'll go up there and drop her off. My plan is during the race to bike along a lot, bike/run a little bit. We'll kind of figure it out, but I want to bike because I have so many people in both the half and the full at different paces and different speeds. I've got my friend Bones, who's going to be, you know, way up in the marathon, way up in the front, I'm sure. And I want to check him out. And so, yeah, I'm just going to be all over. How about you, Mike?
Well, I'm running the full marathon.
Nice. So you're going to be along the course from the start to finish.
Yeah. I'll see you out there. So you like to bike instead of like setting up your cooler in your chair with the umbrella.
Well, I haven't, I've biked it one time when, a buddy of mine from Iowa came up and he ran it, and I biked along different spots to see him. That was a lot of fun. I haven't done that in a long, long time. So I'm really looking forward to that, to be able to move around and see people at different places on the course. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So when was the last time that you ran in one of the races, Gary Bjorklund or Grandma's Marathon?
The last time I think was the full, I think that was 2010, I believe, when I ran it. And I've done the full and the half twice, and I forget the years, but 2010, I'm pretty sure was the last time I participated. Yeah.
Are you going to go back?
Someday. Yeah, for sure. I think I will. I don't know when yet though. Yeah. It's just so much fun for me to watch, and I really don't feel necessarily like I'm missing out by not participating in the races.
Right.
I just really love watching all my friends out there.
Well, and there's plenty to watch too. I mean, there's a steady stream of people from like what, like 7, 8 a.m. until, you know, noon too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Depending in, you know, the half marathon starts at 6:15. So, I mean, by the time they get into town, you know, you're looking at, you know, 6:40-ish or so or whatever until noon, or I mean, there's hours of spectating to be involved. And so what I like about the biking aspect is I can kind of buzz around and they can even get all the way down to the finish line if I need to, and then get all the way back out to, you know, 3, 4, 5 miles from the finish kind of deal, or wherever, or start at like, you know, Leicester River as people just get into town on 60th Avenue East there. And so I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, biking's the way. I mean, if you're thinking about driving around Duluth, just, oh man.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to walk how many miles just to get down the canal if you're driving anyways, you know?
Yeah. Forget about trying to drive along. That's, you know, drive, put your bike in your car or on your bike rack and drive as close as you can. Take the bike off and utilize your bike to get places, because the lake walk is a good good avenue to kind of access the race in different spots.
Especially getting into Canal Park too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
This is my 11th year in a row doing either the half or the full.
That's pretty good. I didn't realize you had that long of a streak going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah. But it's one or the other, so it's kind of like, eh, but...
All right, let me ask you this then, Mike. I know you've kind of got a foot thing. How are you feeling for the marathon?
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I mean, so my brother's running too, and you know, he's maybe a 3:45, you know, 4 hour type runner, and I think with his training, so I might just run with my brother.
Okay.
I was initially thinking I could do a 3 hour sub 3 hour, yeah, just as kind of a benchmark, but yeah, I don't know how well that's gonna go. I don't feel super trained. I feel a little injured, a little banged up, and so I'm gonna play it by ear. Also, I'm volunteering. I'm the race course coordinator actually for the Irvin 5K.
Oh, nice! I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, that's kind of a moving a lot of stuff and helping out the night before, and I might go up and set up scaffolding for the marathon start.
Okay,
if cool. I can get a ride up and then run back. So that's the, that's like my justification to just kind of jog it and take it in. And
oh yeah, you have worked before.
Yeah, so, I can just jog it back because I'm tired.
Nice, nice.
But I've pretty much raced it every year. You know, yeah. 10 in a row. I think every year I really try and push myself, and I think it would be pretty difficult to say to myself like I'm just gonna jog it. I'm just gonna. So, but then again, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of beer on the course. That might be something fun to try for once.
You know, honestly, I've done the full twice. And one time I did it kind of that way, just a relaxed, in fact, yeah, just a really relaxed run. I just wanted to experience it. And so, yeah, I kind of chilled with the people along London Road at times. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And then the second time I tried to run it as well as I possibly could. And, you know, it was a so-so year. But so I've done it both ways. And it's both fun. It's fun both ways, too.
Grandma's is a hard race, and I don't know why. I mean, every year it's just a struggle, you know.
I feel like it's a challenging race, a difficult race for sure, because of it is so relatively flat, and it doesn't really change up. You don't do a lot of turning, just to change up pace and kind of the angle of your body and all that kind of stuff very often.
Yeah.
For me, I kind of like a course that keeps me a little more mentally engaged by doing something. The course doing something different every 5 to 6 or 7 miles or
sure.
so. That being said, if you're really good at that kind of more straight, flowy course, it's a fast course, especially if you get a normal Duluth weather day with maybe a little tailwind and cool,
yeah,
cool weather in the morning. It can be an extremely fast course, especially the half marathon as well.
I feel like for weather, we either get like a nice solid tailwind, but it's cold and rainy and foggy, or you know, a nice sunny day, but it tends to be a headwind and
yeah,
hot.
Yeah, and even if you get a sunny day and the weather's cool, that sun can still beat down on you as it gets a little higher and higher up in the sky, because mm-hmm. that course doesn't offer a ton of shade out there. So especially if you're doing the marathon, and if you're out there for, you know, 2.5 to 5 hours, that's a lot mm-hmm. of time just in the sun. You're going to get tired simply because of being in the sun for that long regardless. So yeah, the weather definitely plays a role in this marathon.
So if it's sunny, as a coach, do you recommend to run the tangents or seek the shade?
I always say run the tangents regardless. I don't think the shade, there's enough offering of shade to make a difference, you know. Always run the tangents. That's how the course is marked, is to run the tangents.
Right.
And so anytime you're not running those tangents, meaning if you don't know what we mean by running the tangents, being on the inside of the curves on every single curve, not just staying on one side of the road, but running on the inside of the curve every single time. Run the straightest line that you possibly can. That's how the course is marked. And anytime you're away from that line, that imaginary line, you're running longer than the course.
It seems so straight when you look at a map, but there are plenty of curves, kind of just slight curves, you know, up Highway 61 there.
Yeah, there are. And it makes a difference. I couldn't tell you exactly what the difference would be. I suppose with Google Maps, we could probably figure it out if you're really accurate with your mm-hmm. your clicking on the map and kind of figure out that difference. But it's a difference for sure.
Mm. Grandma's Marathon coming up. We'll see you all down there.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Let's get into the shout-out section.
Yeah, shout-out. Our big one for the day, or for this episode, is to Kyle Sather for getting his comma. I'm going to call it the Kyle K. For 1,000 straight days of running. And
pretty impressive.
Super impressive. Nice job, Kyle. And we've got a little interview with him, so we'll kind of get started with that.
All right, now we're still out running on at Bagley, and Kyle is now a little over a mile, almost 2 miles into his run. So his official comma it's been earned. Kyle, what are you feeling?
Just another day, really.
Yeah.
You know, I guess when I had started, I didn't really imagine it getting to this point. So to actually make it this far, I feel it takes a whole lot of luck in the first place and a lot of patience too, knowing that it only accumulates one day at a time. So, but I'm definitely pretty grateful that I could even get to this spot in the first place.
Well, yeah, credit to you. 1,000 straight days, that is super impressive. And Nick Nygaard, the gauntlet has been thrown down by Kyle. See what you can do, bud.
Yeah. Nick was probably one of my first inspirations to do this while we were working together. He had gotten a streak up to 800 something days. Like, at the time, I was like, God, how can you do something like that? And Nick has an active streak right now, too.
Yeah.
I think his is maybe 2 weeks shorter. Or he started 2 weeks after I started mine, just by coincidence. So bring it on, Nick.
All right, we'll check back in here in a little bit. All right, and we have now finished up with our run. Kyle and I jogged through Bagley a little bit, which is really nice. It's a beautiful day, nice soft wood chip trails. Kyle just got his comma today. Kyle, what are you feeling?
Feeling good. Bagley's pretty nice for days like this, and I think that's part of what makes the streak sustainable is, you know, getting out on trails like Bagley, the soft wood chips and cool weather definitely makes it easier to do it on a daily basis.
Yeah, you live nearby. How many times in the thousands would you say, how many runs have been in Bagley, would you guesstimate?
Man, I don't know. There are a few points last winter where I would just put my shoes on. It took more time to dress for the run than the run took itself. Living here in Duluth, it takes like 12 minutes to put everything on to stay warm. So then I'd run out in Bagley and it'd be like maybe a 12-minute run down here to the little pond and back up to my house. And that was like 1.2 miles. And there are plenty of days, maybe, I think I would say a fifth of my runs have been like less than 2 miles.
And 1 mile is your minimum, right?
Yeah, it's got to be 1 mile within each 24-hour period between midnight to midnight.
Yeah, and what's the, there's like an official governing body of this whole deal. What's the website?
That's runeveryday.com. That's the United States Running Streak Association that governs that. To get on there, you have to have a streak of longer than 1 year. Then after that, you can pay like yearly dues or like a lifetime membership. I believe they still have a lifetime option. And it's a pretty cool way of like seeing what other people do for a living, how they keep their own streak going, and just making connections. There's two other Minnesotans today who are actually also celebrating day 1000. And I've met one of them. Her name's Missy Jacobson. So shout out to Missy.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know in this day and age with the GPS watches and Stravas and ways to upload and kind of prove your run, I expect the streak thing to kind of become a little more popular than in the days pre-GPS watches as well.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes it easier, and it certainly adds a level of accountability to it more than just saying, oh, I went out and ran a mile each day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's part of why I upload every single one of my runs, so that people are like, did you do it or did you not?
Yeah, there's absolute proof out there. And of course, as we know, the internet doesn't lie. But no, we, obviously with a runner, we trust that. So 1,000, what's next then, Kyle? What's next for you?
Well, in terms of races, I'll be doing Grandma's in 13 days. So I suppose that will be run streak day 1,013. Really, I don't have a certain limit to this. And that's been a pretty common question is, how long are you going to do this? And really, I want to do it as long as I'm able.
Yeah.
Until I'm physically incapable. If I shatter an ankle, tear an ACL, have a doctor tell me, don't do this.
Yeah.
I think that's about when I would call it quits. But as long as I am perfectly capable of doing so, I will.
Nice. And I saw something in Runner's World. There was a guy, 50 years, I think? Did you see that story?
Yes, he just hit 50 years. I think it was May 26th, and he's the only active streaker over 50 years. And there's four others over 45.
So I'm just trying to get my head around that. I'm 48 years old, so he's been running every single day that I've been alive, plus another year and a half.
It's it's really hard to like comprehend.
It really
and process
is.
Process that stuff.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. That's really cool. I'm sure when he started too, he had no ambitions of trying to hit a certain mile mark or a certain mile point. It just kind of happened. So.
And I think the guy that's done the 50-year streak, he's averaged 10 miles per day top of it.
Oh wow! I didn't read that part. That's impressive.
So that's a lot of lifetime mileage on top of getting out there every single day.
Wow, that's cool. That's really cool. Well, Kyle, congratulations on the comma. We'll get some more miles in with you. Let's continue on from 1001, 1002, and so on.
Yep, not 1000, not 1001, not 1002. Thanks so much, Tony.
Taking his skills to Duluth.
Appreciate it.
All right, and that was my interview with Kyle whilst we were out there literally running for his 1,000th straight day, which is really cool. Thanks, Kyle. Congratulations. And last, we've got our interview, our more official kind of interview, one-on-one kind of interview that we always do in our episodes. This one with Jarowaman of Austin Jaro. He's kind of, you know, the local icon, I think, here in Duluth. We're going to talk about a few things, and it's always interesting to hear your Jaro's take on the running scene and Duluth running in general. So we'll get started with that.
I'm here with Jaro from Austin Jaro, and many of you know Jaro's name. Been around in the running scene in Duluth for a long time, and we've got some questions that we want to ask him. Jaro, thanks for joining us. My first question is, when did you start? When did you start running?
Well, I ran track at Ordine. It was like the 100, I think, was my first race. Mm-hmm. But I was always looking for the longest race I could find. Mm-hmm. And in junior high, which we called it then, the longest race, I think, eventually was a half mile, which didn't seem very long to me because there are people running the mile, and I'd heard about longer distances. So this would have been like the mid-70s. And then my first real race longer than that was a 10K in August of 76, the Greekathon, which was one of the original Duluth races in the 70s.
And how old were you then?
So 1976, I would have been 15.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's pretty young then, 10K. That's pretty good. I mean, not that it can't be done, but that's pretty cool.
I mean, it's 15. I'm doing a 10K, but my daughter, who's now 10, mistakenly did a 10K 2 or 3 years ago when she was entered in a 5K and missed the turnaround.
Oh, yeah.
So my 10K at age 15 pales in comparison to that.
Yeah, she's already got you beat.
Sasha does, yeah.
I was kind of similar in high school, actually. We didn't have cross country. Our school didn't have a cross country team at the time. We only had track, and I thought, well, they don't run long enough on the track. I remember seeing ABC's Wide World of Sports and seeing Salazar and Bill Rogers on the New York Marathon and just thinking, that is awesome when I was a kid. And here on the track, they don't run very far. I don't want to deal with that. I want to go out and run a long time. Yeah. And we didn't have cross country, so I didn't do high school track or anything. So, yeah, kind of similar. How about other sports? Did you do other sports as well?
No. Well, maybe in seventh grade, I swam for a few weeks, but that didn't really take. And I have regrets, though, that, you know, I'm a big swimmer now. I swim 3 days a week, and I kind of wish I'd stuck with it and done more swimming earlier and maybe done triathlons earlier in my career. And I played basketball very briefly in middle school or junior high then, too. But I'm 6'5" now, but I didn't grow until much later on, and by the time I was tall, it was too late to teach me how to play basketball. So that was a very brief thing, but it was mostly all running for the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. And I forgot what I was going to ask that was kind of related to that, but I guess, did you run in college?
So I went to St. Olaf, and I ran two cross-country seasons there, my freshman and sophomore year, and a little bit of track my freshman year. And I, you know, I have good memories of that, but I didn't get very far because, I dropped out of school at St. Olaf and ended up transferring to UMD. And at that point, I never was full-time, and I never, you know, ran varsity at UMD at all.
Yep. Do you think, looking back, was that sort of a good thing or a bad thing, or it just was?
Just was, yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of great things happen over the years, but if I did it over again, mm-hmm. I was always looking for the longest race I could find, which led me to run a 100-miler at age 20.
Okay.
So I 10K at age 15, 100-miler at age 20, and then I came down in distance, didn't do a marathon for a couple years after that. If I would have, I would have listened to my college coach who wanted me to run the mile, and I wanted to run the 10K because it was the longest race. And if I had listened to him and worked on my mile and then kind of worked my way up the distances over the years and saved the 100-miler for like 30, 40, 50, I think I could have run some better times at the shorter distances. Yeah. I mean, I did okay at those distances, but it's a better way to progress is to start with the shorter distances and work longer instead of the other way around.
Yeah, more the classic approach.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of coaches, tell me about some of your coaches that you had in the past, or even some of your running mentors or kind of heroes and local people that you really looked up to at the time.
Well, the first person that springs to mind isn't local. It's Emil Zatopek.
You know, was my next question is, what about non-local people, the heroes?
Right. So Zatopek was first because he was the 5-10 and marathon champion, and, you know, back in the 50s and, well, 50s mostly.
Yeah.
And then that's not really what your question was. Coaches. So my high school coach, Dick Scobe, at East High School, he was a great people person, and he kept it fun, and he didn't push us too hard. And so we didn't have super teams, but we didn't burn out either. And so I think he was a good coach to have early on. So that I was still hungry to compete as I got older, and I, you know, didn't come out of there all beat up and sick of running. Yeah. So I like Dick Skog, and I still see him now and then, and he got me started. And then we talked about my college coach, who I didn't really get along with because I didn't want to listen to what he had to say about being a shorter distance runner and whatnot. But he, you know, he meant well. I remember it was, as far as coaching is concerned, I got into my late 20s and my father was starting to realize that running, you know, even though I'd had a store for years and I was running for years, he goes, well, this is pretty important to you. And I said, yes, why don't you have a coach? And so I said, that's not a bad idea. So we got a hold of Vern Johnson, who was the coach in Carlton, I believe. And we hired him. And for 3 or 4 years, I did, you know, very serious training. And during that time, I had all my PRs from 5K through the marathon.
Nice.
Late 80s, early 90s, classic Lydiard training, you know, 100 miles a week, hills, speed work, fartlek, you name it. We did everything for years.
Where did you do your hill work?
Well, the Goat Hill is West 3rd Street, which is pretty familiar to local people. Occasionally, we'd go over to Pleasant View off of Jean Duluth Road. And then there's a famous hill on Highway 210 in Jay Cook Park. And they called it Mount Sarabachi. And at the end of the hill, I think, is where Highway 210 meets, is it Jay Cook Park Road? Right by Forbay's aid station. The Voyager.
Okay.
And
yes,
it's a half mile long hill that we would do repeats on.
That sounds painful.
It was.
That's the beauty of Duluth. There's no shortage of hills for hill work, and especially if you're doing a Lydiard approach. Which he wants
lots
a lot of
hills.
Yeah, exactly. And then when did, within that time frame, when did Austin Jaro come about, and how did that come about?
So in the early 80s, I met Bill Austin, I don't know how or where, probably at races, but he had a running shoe store, one of the first in town, not the first, but one of them, in his dad's hardware store in Proctor.
Oh, wow.
And so I would come and buy shoes from him, and then we would go out and run. I mean, he started the Voyager back in the early 80s, and so he would take me out on the power lines, and when he would meet somebody, his traditional thing to do would be to take them out in the power lines and destroy them. He'd take them out, and then on the way back, he would take off and leave people behind. And I think I was one of the first people that didn't get left behind. And so he said, oh, this is someone to reckon with. But so we, you know, he was the one, I always say this as a joke, but I fell into a bad crowd, and Bill Austin being the bad crowd, he got me involved in the first 100-miler at Old Dominion 1982. And when I should have been training for shorter distances, but I always wanted to run a 100-miler. It was just so unique. Not like now where there's a 100-miler every weekend and people run dozen of them a year. Back then, if you ran 100-miler ever, it was a big deal.
Yeah, and they were more out east. You had western states kind of early, but a few more of them out east, I think.
That's where mine was, Old Dominion's in Virginia.
Yep.
So that was 82. And then his dad sold his hardware store, and Bill had to move his running shoes out, and the vendors would not let him have a store in his basement for very long. And so in 84, we figured out that we could go into business together and get his shoes out of his dad's basement, and we found a place downtown.
Nice. And then how many years? Are you guys on 35-ish years?
Well, we opened on Leap Day 1984.
Okay.
So, yeah, 35 years.
35 years. That's longer than probably half of our listeners have been alive.
Possibly, yes. Yeah.
And how many different locations?
This is our 10th location.
Wow,
is where we are
that
now.
Many.
Over 35 years, we've been so stable for so long, because we've been in the same location now since Veronica was born. So that's 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, we were just next door over where Chico's is.
Mm,
but
okay.
Before that, we had four different locations downtown, two in West Duluth, two in the Miller Mall, and then two at Stone Ridge. I don't think I'm missing any there, but maybe that's up to 10. But this is, you know, we've been much more stable. But back in the day, you know, we were the only running shoe store, but we weren't just a running shoe store. We sold football, baseball, starter jackets, the sporting good stuff. We started as a running shoe store. We're back to being a running shoe store, but in between, we were doing lots of crazy
other
stuff.
Things, yeah. I had a starter jacket back in the day. Mm-hmm. In fact, my first running shoes that I bought was at your store. Here in Duluth, My first running shoes here in Duluth. It was the Nike Zoom Marathoner. And I was rummaging just the other day through your discount bin, and you have some of those shoes in there.
It was like one pair left.
There's one or two, and they're tiny little shoes. But I saw that, and I thought, I had that same shoe. That was
those
a great
old,
shoe.
Those are old shoes.
I love that shoe.
Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of shoes then, what is your favorite shoe of all time? Do you have a one shoe
time? It's still the Brooks Adrenaline.
Yep.
There was a time back in the... when I thought I had to have like the top of the line shoes. So I wore the Kayano and the predecessor to the Kayano. But after a while I realized that for me, it was fit was the most important thing. And that shoe fit me for years. And even though it's a little bit different this year, it still fits me better than most other shoes. So, I mean, in recent memory, in the last 10, 15 years, it's been the Adrenaline. But, I mean, there are favorite shoes I had from the 80s and 90s that might come to me if we talk about them enough.
Right, right. Because you've had a lot over the years now at this point. A lot of running shoes. Within the sport of running itself, and this covers a lot of stuff, but what is it about the sport that you really like? What really connects with you?
Wow. Because I liked it right away.
Yeah.
And
I realize that's kind of vague.
It is.
But,
you know, I suppose part of it is the people.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, I mean, runners are all types of people. It's not like a runner type necessarily. There are people we get along with, you know, and people who see things our way politically and culturally and whatnot.
Yeah.
I do other sports. You know, I've been a skier over the years, and I feel I kind of belong with skiers, but I don't feel totally comfortable there. And, you know, there's swimmers and there's triathletes, and we all, you know, but I suppose I just keep coming back to running where I feel comfortable, and maybe it's just because I'm better at it, and I found success in it really early on. I find myself able to imagine just running and not race anymore. It used to be running was a means to getting in shape to race.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been going through I have to think of his name now, the famous book from the 70s or probably the 80s, Running and Being.
Oh, Sheehan.
Yeah.
George Sheehan.
I'm pretty sure he had stages of a runner's career.
Okay.
The novice, and then there's the racer, and then eventually there's two or three things more, and then you get to a stage where you're just a runner and you don't need the racing anymore. But I think I have feet in like two or three different levels right now, and I haven't totally given it up yet, because I ran a race last weekend, and it was a blast.
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember where I was going to go with that. What were we talking about?
what got me into running, or yeah. what, you know, like why.
Oh yeah, one thing that you had mentioned is I feel like with running is that you meet a lot of people and you end up being friends with a lot of people that you probably in your normal life wouldn't ever bump into.
Right.
In the running world, because you have that one thing in common. But
yeah.
social circles, you might not have ever met them. Work related things, you never would meet them. But all of a sudden, running has a connection, and you get a chance to meet with some people that you never would. And that's a great thing for
sure.
And
you can go and run for hours with somebody, and you know, you might, after a while, you get to know them pretty well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's a really cool thing. And I think a lot of people really like that.
Oh, yeah.
About it. Besides running, what would be a current hobby of yours or a current interest? I already know one.
Which one? You're not talking about snooker,
are you?
I'm
talking about snooker,
yeah. Well, so my snooker thing dates back quite far. I went to school through UMD in Birmingham, England, studying England program, and found snooker there. It's a British version of pool with a much larger table, and it's a much more difficult game, and I fell in love with it. And then we came back, and I totally forgot about it for decades.
Ah.
And then I was on the internet in 2012 looking for either cross-country skiing races or track meets, and then there was this little black ball symbol that said snooker. So I clicked on it, and I'm watching it live from England or wherever, and I said, oh, yeah, that. And it's funny. It kind of coincided with, you know, I've been a big track and field and distance running fan for years and years and years, and after a while, I'm not sure if people can relate to this, but I've become more jaded and less enamored of top runners, and there's always these drug scandals, and it was like, all my favorite runners were from the 90s. Moses Kipsenui, Daniel Coman, Paul Tregat. And after a while, they retired, and I just never found a new runner. Although I did have Sammy Wanjiru, who was the Olympic champion and then died tragically. And he was my last really favorite running champion. But snooker came along, and then I had some new people and a new sport to look up to. And I never stopped running or following it, but then I got very distracted by top snooker players. And then not too long ago, I discovered darts.
Okay.
Another British sport. I seem to be an Anglophile, although the best darts players in the world are Dutch and English and Scottish and Welsh and whatnot. But it's the same, you know, some of the same audience for snooker and darts, although they're very different. So I'm more a fan of those sports, but you won't see me doing either of them. Yeah. I'll always be running because it's too frustrating to do something that's not my type of thing, but I do like to watch them.
See, I like to play golf, but I'm really bad at it. And golf is one of those things you really have to dedicate a lot of time to be good at. And I just don't have that kind of time, but maybe someday if I retire and I can't run anymore,
I think I will be with you doing it.
Yeah.
I ran this morning with Aaron and Darren, and we ran 25K and we ran by Leicester Park.
Yeah.
And we said, why aren't we doing that?
I know.
Because people our age are golfing.
Right.
But we still can run. We ran, you know, 25K and if,
it was
a good run, but at some point, you know, retirement will be looming in, I don't know when, how many years. I've got good golf clubs. I'll be out there with you.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can kind of do both in a given day. You can get a 6 mile run in, and then you go to the golf course after that or something. So it can be done for sure. Mike has a question for you that he wanted to ask.
Okay.
With regards to the history of Duluth running and your involvement in that, was there anyone season or anyone's year kind of that stands out as impressive in terms of performances by locals?
Well, there's a period of time, and I don't know why this just sprung to mind, but in the 90s, Tim Stradiotti. I don't know. People
I know the name.
Yeah,
I only see his name posted on your shirt stuff, actually, is when I see it.
So he's not as active as a runner now, but it wasn't too long ago, in his early 50s, on the track, I think he ran under 4 minutes and 50 seconds for the mile.
Wow.
So that was like this last little burst of performance. And maybe he'll come back. You never know. But, I mean, as we get older, things fall apart and they don't always come back together again. But during the 90s, Tim was the top local finisher at Grandma's maybe a half dozen times.
Mm-hmm.
His best time, I think, was under 2:30, but he ran a whole bunch of low 2:30s. And he was like a three-time winner of Park Point. His best distances might have been closer to the 800, but but he spent most of his time pursuing Grandma's because Grandma's is the local race. Yeah. You know, before there was a half marathon, there was Park Point. So you know, those were his two races, and he always seemed to bring his best game there. So he and I have been rivals over the years, and I suppose I've won as beaten him as many times as he's beaten me, but. I always think about, you know, the best runners of the last 30 years, and you'd have to have him among those for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. How about you? When was your kind of best running years, would you say? Year or 2-3 years?
It depends on if you want to meet actual peak performance would be when you normally would be from like age 29 to age 32. When I was being coached by Vern Johnson, all my PRs from 5K to the marathon are basically in there. Although there was an earlier stretch of time when I was, you know, running the NMTC series, and I really wasn't focused at all on the road or the track. And so all of my best performances were all these NMTC races. And luckily for me, most of those performances are recorded on Northland Runner and NMTC, so I can look back and see all of them, you know. Even though maybe the competition wasn't always good, but it was sometimes, and... But I was a very serious anti-road runner in the early 80s.
Uh-huh.
So most of my part, I left a lot of good performances in the woods, and that seemed very important to me at the time.
Yeah.
And then eventually I discovered road racing and heading down to the cities for all the big races down there. So most of my best road races were not in Duluth. They were in St. Paul, Minneapolis, on certified courses. But see, I suppose, 1989 to 1993 was my peak.
It is kind of interesting. You touched on this a little bit with, you know, doing all the trail stuff and then getting into the roads, but running offers, and then you do, you know, the ultras as well. Running offers so many, I guess, good distractions. You know, you can go onto the track and run some track races if you want, especially go down to the cities, or you can stick to the roads. You can do the trails, especially here in Duluth. You can just do shorter distances. You do the marathon, you do the ultras. And I get how one thing kind of catches your attention for a little while, or maybe it's just a season, but maybe generally it seems like it's about a 5-year stretch where you can, somebody gets focused in on, this is what I want to, this is what is interesting me right now. I think.
So like I started with ultra marathons in the early 80s, did a bunch of them, then left them behind to try to run fast times for shorter distances, 5K to the marathon, then got back into ultra marathon again in the 90s with the Voyager and other races. And then I got sick of them and left them behind again. And then just, I think I ran my last ultra marathon like 2 years ago after having done a bunch of them for half dozen years. And now I think I'm really done with ultra marathons.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I really am, or they're done with me.
Yeah,
maybe.
That's what I'm telling people too. For me, I don't have a huge interest, but things change.
Yeah.
You know, right now I don't have an interest in doing them anymore, but I can't say never. You know, that's one thing the only thing I've learned probably is don't say never. For me right now, I'm all about the milers. Watching YouTube videos of Steve Ovett and watching some of the more recent people like El Garouge and the Nick Willis. And I just love watching the milers.
I mean, the mile, you know, 4 minutes or less, it's a good, it's your attention span.
You know,
it's good.
Yeah.
Because if you try to watch a marathon on TV.
Right. Yeah. It's exciting in the last couple, 3 miles, and that's about it. Otherwise, it's mildly interesting to a runner geek. But
because I think just a few weeks ago, Jim Walmsley was running the 50-mile world record or American record. And it was on for 5 hours, and I turned it on a couple times, you know, and it was pretty cool, but it's not something you can really sit and watch all day.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Anything else that you want to talk about with the local, especially specifically the local running stuff?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know, Tim Stradiotti's name came to mind, but they're, I mean, that's farther back, because I, you know, that's more of my specialty, because we've got a bunch of fast runners now, and,
Let me ask you this, because one of the kind of threads and themes that I kind of want throughout this podcast, keeping it local, we really want to keep it just a Duluth, Twin Ports kind of thing, is the idea of mentors, and that all of us runners were kind of links in a chain. And I sometimes think runners as a whole, we tend to forget that. We get a little focused on ourselves, and we sort of forget that someone taught us, and for them, someone taught that person. And I think that's really important to honor and to respect. And now you've been kind of one of the senior guys in the local scene. What's it like to be a mentor?
Yeah, I don't know.
You probably don't consider yourself.
I you can't call yourself a guru.
Right.
Someone else calls someone a guru.
Exactly.
Right?
You can't call yourself a genius. You can't call yourself a guru.
Well, we have a president who calls himself a genius.
Yeah.
But never mind. Normal people. But I suppose that's really what I am, because I don't coach people so much. And I think there are people who are natural coaches like you, but people have asked me to coach them, and I have lots of advice for them. Mm-hmm. I can answer questions anytime, and I do it all the time. So I've been giving out coaching advice little by little over the decades. Mm-hmm. But mostly I'm self-consciously trying to set an example to people that what you can do if you put your mind to it and not go overboard.
Yeah.
And I have gone overboard. I've run 100 miles a week and during my prime, but I was the right age for that. Everyone has to kind of find for themselves what they can do with what they have, and there are time limitations.
Yeah.
Work, family, your body. And I just try to remind people to have some fun with it. You know, it can be serious, but I know some people who've just made themselves miserable trying too hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't last very long.
Well, from my perspective, kind of just, seeing you over the years, I've looked up to you and how what you just said of setting a good example.
Yeah.
Of kind of how to go about your running passion, whether it's the store or your own running or advice to people. Yeah. I think that's the main key, is just set that good example, because other people are always watching.
And I suppose one of the things I provide as an example, and I don't always think about it, is that I'm helping with the NMTC races, and there's a lot of energy and time that goes into that. And I always liked going and doing the races for years, and I actually ran in them for decades, and now I'm kind of retired because there are jobs that need to be done, and I might as well do them, because those races are too hard anyways,
Yeah.
After so many years, I can't run fast on the trails anymore anyways. Mm-hmm. I find it really frustrating, so it's a good thing to that I'm still interested, and I'm helping at the races, and we're having this great time, and everyone seems to be having, and so we'll just keep doing that as long as we can.
Yeah, the NMTC races, I think, are kind of the epitome of the Duluth running culture, anything, is what I kind of feel like.
And it's great that they're inexpensive, and this is neither here nor there, but I always feel kind of bad for local race directors who are trying to get people to come do their races. And the NMTC provides this really inexpensive way of getting your competition yayas out.
Yeah.
And then it's harder to justify spending money at a real race.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I apologize to all the race directors out there, but, we just can't stop now.
Right, yeah. No, I agree. Grandma's is like the Super Bowl, and NMTC is like just everything else about Duluth running.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I think that's about it. That's about all the questions that I have, I think. So thanks again, Jarl, for joining us
on the
Duluth Rundown, and we'll see you out there.
Okay.
Cool.
That kind of takes care of episode number 4, and thanks for everyone for joining us. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode being a little more unique. Mike, you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I do. If our listeners out there have any thoughts, ideas, or if you're doing a race, definitely let us know. We're on Facebook, so look us up on Facebook and make a little comment, especially if you want a shout out for a race that you're training for. And we want to hear from you. We want to hear the local Duluth runners, what you're up to, what you're doing, and how you're finishing your key races of the year.
Yeah, for sure. We are on Facebook. We are also, you can email us too, just theduluthrundown@gmail.com. Send us an email there. To listen to the podcast, we're pretty much on all the major channels now. iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, anything else? Is
it Google Play?
Google Play. I thought there was another one. Yeah. So a lot of we're pretty much on all the channels that you're going to put your podcast. So hopefully you tune in and enjoy the podcast.
See you out there.